Hi, my name is Jordan. I am a special education teacher from the UK. I share my passion for everything communication, sensory regulation, and fun lesson ideas for my classroom of disabled pupils aged 4 to 11. Each week, I am joined by experts in the field, answering your questions and sharing our knowledge and experience working alongside our beautiful young people. Let's get started. Hello everybody and welcome back to another week. Today I am going to be joined with Michelle from ARFID Life UK, and she is a mum of a boy with ARFID, which is an eating disorder. And today I want to talk all about ARFID and the impact it has obviously on the family and the child, but also how we can best support as a staff team as well. This year in September, new to me, we have had a pupil diagnosed with ARFID, but actually watching him and learning more about it since we've had him on my class, I'm realizing actually I have had lots of other children throughout my teaching of 15 years with similar traits and similar relationships with food, really. So now I'm just wondering, did they have ARFID as well and they were just pre-diagnosis? So I'm sure there's a lot of children out there, especially if you work with autistic children or have autistic children. It's far more common, or maybe even exclusive to autism, is a question I want to ask. So I'm going to get Michelle on now and we can ask her all of the questions. Hello, Michelle.
Hi.
First of all, thank you so much for having your account. It's been really, really useful to me as a teacher newly to this ARFID world.
And thank you for having me. We're very grateful to have a little chat tonight.
Of course. So let's start from the beginning, because I'm sure you haven't been ARFID mum forever.
No. Nope.
So talk about your journey before and then maybe what it looked like and then
into now,
into this ARFID world.
Yeah. So I've got two children. My eldest doesn't have ARFID. It's my youngest. So we had a lot of issues with her when she was younger. She's got like a rare bone disease, had always kind of heavily masked, but we never really knew what. And actually it's turned out that she was actually masking her autism. So, and since kind of her growing up, we've seen her sensory side come out. But actually with Arlo, when he was born, he was quite poorly at birth. He had chicken pox at 3 weeks old and then shingles at 4 months. So he had quite a rough start. And then from that, like whenever we laid him down, his hands would really flicker and we was a bit like, oh, what's all this? You know, they wondered, was it epilepsy? And then as the time went on, they was like, this could be sensory. And we was like, okay. It was kind of like his just reaction to laying down. He hated having his hair washed. Just everything sensory related. As a baby, he hated it, absolutely hated it. So then as we started weaning, obviously being the second child, we kind of had all the books, read all the everything that you go down that road of weaning. So we started, had purees, loved anything soft, anything cold, wasn't a fan of hot textures. And then as soon as we hit the lumps, the bumps, the textures, it just stopped. And we was a bit like, oh, okay, let's just see what happens. You know, we carried on trying, carried on persevering, then started questioning myself, is it me? What am I doing? Have I given up? You know, am I not giving him enough options of maybe like puree as opposed to finger foods? Like, you know, what's going on? And as time went on, it was more obvious that he was having that typical beige diet, you know, lived off of potato waffles. He would suck them to every ounce of their life until they swallow. He could swallow it. You know, loved skips, custard creams, anything that was just easily edible that didn't take much effort.
Yeah.
And it was all very kind of, you could see the sensory side was there. So we kind of went down that road first. No one ever mentioned autism. Everyone had said to me, he's not autistic. It's obviously just he's got sensory processing. So it was like, fine. You know, we started to look into it. It was under a pediatrician anyway, through like being poorly at birth. So we brought it up with them. And they was like, well, let's get you under a dietitian. We'll see what they say. And this was when we was hit with, which I'm sure a lot of people are going to agree, the fussy eating. It's just the fussy eater. It's a stage. It's neophobia. You know, it's a part of growing, because he was maybe 2.5, 3 by this point. Still not eating maybe no more than 10 foods. All the same thing, like biscuits, just anything that was soft. So it got to the point that I was a bit like, no, this isn't right. This isn't my fussy child. You know, I knew something wasn't. I knew in my heart there was more. Well, not unfortunately, we moved house and it actually got us discharged from care, which We had no clue. We didn't know it would happen. We kind of just went along to the next dietitian appointment and they was like, we've got to discharge you. And I was like, well, now what? What do you mean you're going to discharge me? So it kind of, but at that appointment, the dietitian did say, he was like, if I see you in 10 years time, it wouldn't be surprised if you told me it has ARFID. And I was like, what's that?
What's ARFID?
So then it kind of got that little light bulb in my head thinking, hang on, I don't know what this is. So I went on my little research detective journey, which I quite enjoy. And yeah, looked quite deep into ARFID and thought, well, he actually meets the criteria. You know, yeah. His blood work wasn't great. He's low in iron. All his like hemoglobin was really up and down. His platelet count, everything just was all over the place. And I was a bit like, hang on a minute. All the flags and all the boxes are being ticked. What do I do? What do I do now? And because we was in between systems and in between areas, bearing in mind, even though it was only 3 miles away, where we are now, there isn't no services. So I was a bit like, okay, we'll have to pay private, which we did. And he was diagnosed with ARFID. But even then, I was just like, I still don't know what this is. Like,
yeah,
you can read so much, but I think actually until you're living it and you're seeing it in person, it's really hard to explain to someone that doesn't understand.
Yeah, and I'm hoping, and I think that's what this live is going to be about,
because yeah,
I haven't ever heard of it before, like the last couple of years.
Yeah,
but looking back now, I've seen the people that's in my class now, there was people that I thought that's 100% like literally diets of rich tea biscuits and nuggets or sausage rolls or you know whatever it is. And
yeah,
I'm so limited. And when something changes, like the packet, the smell, the logo, whatever it is.
Oh, the packet is a different... huge problem. Yeah, and even recipe changes.
Yeah, exactly. And it happens often, doesn't it? I'm not living in this world of eating disorders and ARFID and autism, because there's so much overlap there, isn't there?
There is a huge overlap. And I think... go on.
Is it true that they don't diagnose ARFID unless you're diagnosed autistic first?
So it's interesting you say that. So we obviously paid privately for his ARFID diagnosis because I was just like, if I can get a diagnosis before we see a paediatrician, I've got an answer on paper. So actually we got the ARFID diagnosis first and then we started to test waters with like private therapy, trying any outlet possible to get help. Well, it was only when they started to say to me, you need to have him assessed for autism. And I was like, I think he is, but everyone else around me is saying no. And then May this year, he was diagnosed autistic. So actually, his was the other way around.
And was your daughter already diagnosed with autism before they said
actually. So she's had lifelong hip problems, which is a whole other new ball game. We have a very kind of polar opposite children, complete different issues, which is really fun to navigate. But actually, her hip problem, she was actually using that as a mask to hide her autism. And it wasn't until she went into junior school that she exploded. And obviously autism in girls is very, very different, which we've now come to learn. She's not diagnosed yet. She's on the pathway, but it's obvious it's there.
Okay.
And hers was, it was just being hidden. But even throughout this whole process, it's now come to light that my husband most probably would have had ARFID as a child. And there's a chance he's got autism or ADHD.
Well,
it opens a whole can of worms.
Yeah, it does though, doesn't it? And the more people I speak to, especially parents, it takes one diagnosis in your family, often with the little one, and all of a sudden it's like, hang on.
And that's what happened with my daughter.
Yeah.
We literally sat here one day and I was like, oh my God, I think she's autistic.
Yeah.
My husband was like, what's going on? And I said, she's masked it. She's a fantastic masker. She could win an Oscar at school. They would have no clue. And I was just like, I can't work out what it is. And then all of a sudden I was just like, wow, now I understand. But she's not got ARFID, you know, she's just a very selective eater. She will eat things if it's slightly different, if the packaging is different, she will eat it.
What is the difference then? Because that's really,
it is more that.
You've got such a great insight into that, because autism eating, I mean, typically people that are autistic people are more predictability, they like routine, it's more rigid, because that reduces anxiety, and that obviously comes on with everything, including food. So typically they would stick to their favorite foods, or they would what's the difference between that and ARFID? Because there is a difference, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think With us, like, we are at the extreme end of the scale with Arfid. You know, we have zero food. Arlo literally drinks milk with his Pediasure supplement shakes in it. He doesn't eat anything that's edible, basically. He's on a liquid diet. But I think it is kind of, it goes hand in hand. It's like their growth. It's more their blood. I know the DSM-5 obviously was 2013, which I do think over time it most probably will get updated, because I suppose as time goes on, they're learning more about it. But I think a lot of it is, it's more of the extreme, like, you know, some autistic, you know, like having autism, being a selective eater, they may eat a different crisp potentially, or they might show interest in that. Whereas Arlo has no interest in food whatsoever. He keeps telling me that I'm strange because I'm eating. You know, it's odd. It's like his brain's just not geared in the right way to want to eat food. Like, he has got a massive trauma. You know, he had tonsillitis and blamed a wafer for the pain, which triggered the first response to losing a lot of food. And then he had his appendix out. This just July just gone. And that completely lost his yogurts. Hence, well, we're just down to milk. So his is very trauma-based. The sensory does play a part of his. Like, he hates textures, hates slime, hates anything that's wet. So he's always been avoidant of that. But his is a lot of the trauma. And I think that's the issue we've got. We can't get his trauma help, I suppose, being five, because he's so young. But I actually think if we could focus on that, he may eat something one day if he can just get over that fear. Almost of like swallowing.
Yeah, that does make sense. Because obviously not a medical professional now, but that does make sense that you're wanting to focus on the possible cause rather than the effect.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying to someone the other day. It's kind of like you need to dissect how their Arfid presents. I think, you know, you're very, very lucky if you can find support from a professional, because there isn't any. Like, it's really hard. And, you know, I've done a couple of courses just as a parent, because I just think, well, if I can have a little bit more knowledge, it will help me understand Arlo. And I think since delving into, like, what he likes, even just sensory-wise, I can then focus on those strengths that he has got to incorporate the food into it, so that he can feel more happy about being around food in general. I've got no pressure from him eating. I've got no expectations of him eating at all, because I know it's not going to happen. But if I can get him to sit up the table with me while I'm eating my dinner, or we could go out for a meal and he's not gagging, to me, that's a huge win. And all that, it's these things that no one really understands.
Absolutely. Must affect every aspect of your life. Food is so social, typically, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sitting around and people, like you say, going out for a meal, I can imagine would be impossible. Or even just going out for the day, you'd have to really think about food, wouldn't you? It's a really crucial pillar as part of your day.
I think you become very good at planning. I think you don't realise how much planning goes into it. We went to Chessington a couple of weeks ago, the theme park. And by the time it got to the Saturday, my mum went, "You have thought of absolutely everything." I said, "Yeah, that's what I've got two backpacks for." I had, you know, fidgets, sensory toys, tablets. I had everything going, knowing that if we'd hit any boundary of him feeling uncomfortable, I had a solution. Because I thought, he can't go all day without eating. And it is a massive part. Like Joe's just put in the comment, it affects everything. And no one realises, you know, every aspect, even just going food shopping. You have to be very wary. Is it busy? Everything, you know. Arlo at the minute loves the smell of bread. So as long as I head in a supermarket and head to the bread aisle first and he has a little sniff, he's fine. It's like it calms him down, and then he's happy being in a supermarket. It's like you have to plan. You have to plan everything.
Yeah. And the fact that you want to learn more about it makes so much sense to me.
Yeah.
Because it's a way of getting control over an uncontrollable situation as well, isn't it?
Knowledge is power. Exactly, it is. I kind of feel... Yeah, and it's acceptance. I think you've just... Mm-hmm. It took me a really, really long time to accept this is the journey that we're on. Right. And I think once I'd accepted that, I think as a family, we all seem a lot calmer. And, you know, he's only recently, maybe for the last 6 weeks, he now sits up at the table with us. But he's only done that because of his sister. And, you know, and it's because I think we've all, and even she used to, not annoy him, but, you know, she's eight, she's going to say stuff to him about eating because she doesn't understand herself. But she's got that little bit older that she's realised that if she works with me and we work together, we're seeing tiny pesky little positives, and they're actually coming from her, not me. You know, she's the reason why he set up the table. It's got nothing to do with me. You know, we went out to the Harvester for dinner the other day, and we drive past it every day to school, and he said, can we go there for dinner? And I was like, of course we can go there for dinner. He's not going to win. But I think they've got... But they've got a beautiful Christmas tree that's lit up outside, and he wanted to go and look at it. But we managed to get in there, and we ate dinner.
That is
so. It's funny how,
huge.
And it is huge. I was just shocked. I was like, "What do you mean you want to go there for dinner?" So quick, book a table.
Right in 10 minutes.
Yeah, we're going now. We're going now.
That's amazing. That is massive.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. And it's, and I think they're the things. I think a lot of families, and I get it. I did it. I think you focus on the wanting them to eat. You focus on the. I want you to eat this biscuit. I want you to eat this pack of crisps. I want you to drink this drink. Whereas I've gone for the focus of actually, I want him to be happy. I want to focus on him as a person. Yes, Arvid is here and it's in our life, but there's a great little kid in there that in his own time will be ready to move forward. And I think that's the only bit of advice I can give to anyone, except this
journey. I feel like a mother and a father must be it must be a constant battle of knowing, of course you want them to be happy, of course of course you know that the more demand you put on them the harder it's going to be, of course you know that, but also the other half of you must just be battling with that of I need you to be okay, I need you to be safe, I need you to be healthy, I want you to join social things, it's such a big loss in your life, and those two must constantly at battle with each other.
And you know, and this is the worst time of year, it's Christmas, everyone's talking about going around someone's for Christmas dinner, or they're going out for Christmas meals, or they're taking their kids to have breakfast with Santa, and it's like, I can't do that. And actually it breaks my heart more, I can't do it with my daughter, because if I take her, he's like, well, why aren't I going? Or if we go, it's just not the situation he's going to want to be in. And I think mix that with his autism, he's very structured, he's very in certain ways, we have to really plan, even just for that aspect of it, even just for his autism. So I think we have to really be careful where we go and what we're doing, because of not even just his eating, it's, you know, just the whole bubble itself. You just want them to be happy and you just want to feed your child. Like, don't get me wrong, I cried yesterday. All of us have these moments where you just break down, and it could be over the most simplest of things that could trigger you. And I've had that, you know, I went out, where did we go? I think it was in half term, with bowling with friends, and they was like, oh, we'll have something to eat. And they ordered a sharing platter. There was her and her two kids, and there was me and Millie, and Arlo had his milk, and I burst into tears because I can't order a sharing platter to share it with my kids. Well, I can share it with Millie, but I can't share it with Arlo. And it broke my heart. And I just thought, God, where's that come from? And it come out of nowhere. It just, this emotion come flooding, and I couldn't stop it in the middle of bowling. And I thought, blimey, why has that been so triggering? And I think it's just because you see other families doing things that's so normal.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we don't live a normal life. To us, this is normal. And do you know what? I wouldn't change it for anything.
But that's it, isn't it? In your home.
Yeah, it's normal.
You get lost to the fact, well, it's normal. You become blind to it.
Yeah.
It's just life.
Exactly. And when people come around and they're like, how do you manage? I'm like, I don't know how I manage. I'll just get on with it.
Yeah, someone just said, but also he was still sitting at the table at bowling too. That is huge. And that is so
exactly.
Huge. That's a win, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it all happens at once. You're sad for one thing, but you're proud for another. And it's all just big, isn't it?
And I think that's it. You have that real pull on your heartstring moment. And you think, God, I'm so proud of you for sitting up the table. And actually, that first time he did set up the table, when he come and sat with Millie, I cried and sobbed at the table. And my husband was out because he works quite a lot. And my daughter was like, Mum, what's wrong? And I explained it to her because she's quite anxious and she does worry a lot. And she worries about me quite a lot, bless her. And I just said to her, look, you've done such an incredible thing. I was like, I'm so proud of you for getting him up the table. I said, but I'm so heartbroken that he's not eating. And I just could not stop crying. And you know when you ugly cry? It's making me even well up now. I was ugly crying at the table because I was just like, Millie, this is just so wonderful, but it's just so sad. It's just hard, so, so hard.
Yeah, because even the wins are met with such like loss.
And I think, oh, yeah, and I think that that was it. I was so proud of him. But then the reality set in. We can't have a family meal. I can't cook him dinner, can't cook him breakfast, can't cook him anything, to be honest. It's kind of, you start to think of them things, you know, just the standard things that you do in life, or what you say is like a social, everything's food, isn't it? Everything's food related, everything's social, everything's wherever you go, there is food involved in some situation.
Yeah.
So it is really hard to kind of, but he's coping really well. I think he's learning to cope. And I've only noticed that the last few weeks. Even today, we had a paediatrician appointment this morning to have like his weight and stuff checked. And even the doctor said he was like, he's like a different child in how he's coping. And I was like, I know. I said, it's like he's just realizing that this is just what happens. He goes and has his height and his weight checked, and he gets blood pressure taken, and he gets poked and prodded. I think he's just getting used to it. And I don't think a kid at 5 should have to get used to it, to be honest. I'm grateful.
Isn't it? Because that's great that he's accepting it, and that he's more relaxed, less anxious about something that obviously has to happen to keep him safe. But also, you're absolutely right that no 5-year-old should have to do that.
No, and I think keeping it safe. It is, it's checking that he's okay, you know, even being as poorly as he was in July, he lost a hell of a lot of weight, and he's put it back on and somehow gone back to the same centile that he was back in June. So his body is managing. And I think that's most probably the most important thing for us at the minute. As long as he's managing internally and everything's where it should be, then we can just roll with it every day. Take every day as it comes and just hope he doesn't catch any germs from school.
That must be so encouraging that he is on the right weight track.
I was quite worried, to be honest. He lost 2 kilos in a week when he has appendix out, and he was with skin and bone. It was horrible. He was really, really poorly. And I think, God, the fact that we've managed to get that back and a kilo is quite impressive, to be honest. So I was quite shocked and quite relieved, because I thought, God, if he's not put this weight back on, obviously the shakes that he's now drinking as well aren't working, but they're obviously doing something, which is, you know, great. Yeah, at least I can feel calm about that now.
Yeah, definitely. And even that, it must have been anxiety provoking over what does it taste like? What's the texture of the shake? You know, how are we gonna mix it? How are we gonna? So did you have to like go gradually and build it up?
What happened was, when he came out of surgery, I think where obviously it's all the taste, isn't it? Everything just gets flipped, I think, from the tubing and everything. His breath smelt of strawberries. It was just, you could smell the drugs. And I thought, you're not going to eat these yogurts. And we really struggled to even get him to drink the milk at first. And I was just a bit like, how can I have a really tough, loving conversation with a 5-year-old that you need to drink this? Because we was going to end up having an NG tube. And as much as he's 5, I was a bit like, you may understand, you may not. And obviously it was a really scary situation to be in. And the dietitian originally wasn't going to come and see him. But, you know, the parent advocate for your child, I wasn't going to leave. So she come and saw him, and they gave us literally a 5-day window to get him to drink them. And I was just like, we're going to have a tough, loving conversation. I know we shouldn't be doing no pressure, but unfortunately, in a situation like that, I was like, we've got to go with this. And I know everyone says you shouldn't mix things in their milk, but we had no choice. There is no way, like you say. We had no choice. It was either he drank them or he was going to have a tube. And I'd said that to him, and we was explaining it, and I said to him, you know, do you want to have a tube? You know, there's all these different options, but if we have some of this drink mixed in your milk gradually over time, you won't have to have that. And bless his heart, which is a huge thing anyway, he accepted it. I don't know how. I don't know whether he could see the fear in my face. I don't know. But he drinks a hell of a lot of milk in a day. He most probably drinks 2 pints of milk, because that's all that keeps him going. So all I do is mix the tiniest amount of his Pedasure in with every bottle of milk, and it slightly altered the change of the flavouring, but not massively.
Okay.
You can taste it's in there, but it's not overpowering. So I think that's most probably how we worked it.
Yeah.
I think if he hadn't have drunk that, we would be in a completely different situation right now. So I am very grateful. I'm really grateful that, bless his heart, he put on his big boy pants and we worked at it. You know, even after the 5 days, they said, look, you know, keep going. It's obviously he's going to accept it. And thankfully he has. We've got different flavours, but he ain't going to touch them.
Oh, yeah. Don't even worry. Is he at school?
He is at school. Yeah, he's in year 1.
Okay, and how other school being supportive of this, I assume, and how
they have
that environment with his drinks? And
we've been really fortunate. I think when he was in reception, he really struggled. I think he struggled more with like the sensory overwhelm. I think reception is quite chaotic, isn't it? There's no structure. So that's when we kind of really noticed his autism, because I was like, why is he having these meltdowns coming out of school? Like, he was unbearable. So then at that point, obviously, he was having the yogurts and school was supplying them for us. And then obviously over the 6 weeks holidays or the summer holidays, he lost them. So before we went back, I had a meeting with him and just said, look, this is the situation. We're now down to milk. So I just send him in with 2 bottles of milk with his shakes already mixed in it. And he has them as and when he asks for it. And touch wood, everything, he's fine with that. You know, he does go in the lunch hall if he wants to. But he has also got an option of one of the teachers has kindly, on her lunch break, if he wants to, we'll play Uno with him. Because he loves playing Uno. So yeah, he's made a little Uno club.
It's not just him not eating, is it? There's pressure around, well, where does he go when the other kids are eating?
Exactly.
What about topics and conversations around food? Yeah. You want to know?
Yeah, and the whole healthy eating in school.
God, yeah.
They need to scrap healthy eating in schools. It drives me insane. I have been part of a research thing to try and scrap it, but it's obviously going to take a very, very long time for it to get passed. But hopefully it's coming. But I think that's the problem in schools, isn't it? I get they want children to eat healthily, but they also have to remember that all food is good food, right? There's kids that can't eat. There is children that are peg fed for whatever reason. It might not be because of ARFID. It could be for another condition. I think they do need to reframe how food is in schools.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you, I have to say. And we don't do it in our class. We don't eat by an order either. You know, some schools say your sandwiches first and then this and think, God, just
let them eat.
Who cares if they're eating their cake and leaving their sandwich or whatever? As long as we're working well with the parent, I think that's the most important thing.
And I think that's what I've got. We've got a really good relationship with school. And I think that's most probably the first thing you need, isn't it? If you can get a good relationship and a good understanding, everything else then flows behind.
And an honest understanding as well, you know, as a parent to not have shame and for the school to not feel like you're going to fix everything. Because I think it's going to be very, you know, we want to, both of us, I suppose, both parties want to.
Exactly,
feel
come
like
from both ends.
Have the answer. Yeah. And actually, you don't.
No, and I think a lot of people assume that because your kids start school, they're going to eat because their friends are. You know, so many people said that to me. Oh, when he starts school, he'll sit in the lunch hall and he'll eat lunch. And I was like, well, he isn't.
Well,
you know, still not worked.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, and it must be hard from your part because, you know, you think, God, it's when you don't fully understand, isn't it? And you just think, God, what can we do to help? And it's so... It's hard in so many different angles, isn't it? You know, even school, they was learning about their senses, actually. And she come out and she was like, oh, we've been smelling, I think it was an apple or something. And she was like, oh, we've been smelling it, but he wouldn't taste it. And I was like, well, obviously not.
Great.
But I was like, at least he touched it and he smelled it. And he was quite happy to tell me. And I just said to him, you know, don't take him away from the situation because I don't want him to feel secluded because he is still very young. But at the same time, do not pressure him to do it. If he says no, that's it. The answer's no. If he doesn't want to go in the lunch hall, you go and find the teacher that wants to play Uno. Just go with his lead. Like, don't try anything with him because it's just, I think you have to go by them, isn't it? It's kind of scrap your parenting. You have to just go by their lead.
It's funny. We're kind of having the opposite problem with a student diagnosed with ARFID in our class. I think he has about 4 or 5 foods, but what we're noticing is whenever it's time to do work, it's when he wanders over to his snack table and gets lunch on that. But then you don't want to stop him.
No.
Because he's eating.
Right? Most probably could be something as simple as because everyone else is away occupied, he feels safe to then be able to go and eat. He most probably thinks, no one's watching me now, let me go and have my food quickly and quietly while no one's watching.
Exactly. I think that's exactly right. But typically, our answer would be, you know, work first, then snack or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Actually, it just feels so wrong because so weird to like, all right, like snack open, off you go, and then we get on. But so I've done a lot of unlearning this year, but it's also made me reflect on a lot of students that I also should have done that with. Just because they haven't had a diagnosis doesn't mean that we shouldn't also not put that demand and pressure on.
Yeah, food. And I think that's really important.
Judging on parents as well, honestly. Like, I'm guilty massive. Of it. I think just because they haven't had a diagnosis wrongly...
doesn't mean they deserve the same.
Really, like, even unintentionally shamed and judged the parenting.
Yeah.
And yeah. I feel so awful about that now. But looking back, I definitely was like, well, they're not being strict enough. They're obviously not trying. They're obviously lazy. They just need to... try hard, whatever it is.
But do you know what though?
I've most probably done that prior to having kids, because we're all human, right? Unfortunately, sometimes you do think things, isn't it? And I think it's the not understanding, isn't it? Again, it comes down to
it does. Yeah.
You know, my daughter on long days out, we have to use a wheelchair because she can't walk that far. And people just stare at her, and I'm like, do you want to ask her what's wrong rather than looking at her and making her feel really uncomfortable? And they're like, whoa. And I'm like, I'm like, couldn't you just not look at her? Like, she's not an alien, she's not a trophy on a shelf, she's a young lady, like, give her some slack. And it's, I think people just instantly, you know, we've been sat before out for dinner, and a couple was sat quite close to me, and it got to the point I nearly had to leave, because all I could hear in my ear was, she's not ordering food. Is that a lot of yogurt? Is he not drinking milk? Why is she ignoring him? And I thought, why don't you just ask me? Why don't you just openly say to me, why are you doing that? And I would have said, because he's got an eating disorder.
Or, why would you need to know someone's medical information?
Exactly. And I think it is really, and like you were saying earlier about people being not diagnosed, everyone deserves the same, whether you're diagnosed or not. And I think, and that's the issue at the minute. I think there's so many people struggling to get diagnoses. Like, we're in Essex, and you can get a diagnosis if they're over 8, but there is absolutely no support anywhere. But it's not fair that you have to have a label for somebody to take you seriously. You shouldn't have to. It should be the same care whether you're diagnosed or not. And it's kind of,
So people watching this, that lots of people that come from your page have a good understanding, or probably a life understanding, because they maybe live with it. But lots of people that are coming from, that are watching from my page, this might be good information for them. And then they're thinking, well, hang on, what about this people? What about my child? Or what, you know, we're hearing that it's hard to be diagnosed. Okay, so maybe forget diagnosis. What are the best strategies to do if they're thinking like,
what do I do?
Best
thing to do is go to your GP, but go equipped. I found we kind of skipped the GP, I think, because it was already under a paediatrician, and the health visit at the time was really good. We kind of went that road rather than via the GP. But I do find a lot of people I've spoken to, it's like, you want to take a food diary, do it maybe over like a week, write everything down, like every food group, how much they're having, even down like to what they're refusing, how they react around food, any video evidence, which is hard because I've tried doing it and it is hard because you get your phone out and they stop. Anything you can take, any knowledge off of Lion, like the charities and Beat and stuff have really good information on ARFID. You can take that with you and just say, look, my child is showing these signs. This is their food diary. You can see they're very structured to what they're having. Ask for some bloods to be taken. It's hard because I think it really does depend on where you live, unfortunately, which is what I found the hard way. But even then, I know families that are in areas that there is potentially help, and they're actually no better off than what I am. So it really does flit around in circles. He has been accepted by a complex feeding team in London, but they won't see him till next year. So I am interested to see what they say, because everyone just says the same thing. It's just, you know, ride it out. Like Joe's just said, the GPs don't know what ARFID is. So I think a lot of it is going equipped with, even if you take the criteria for being diagnosed and just be like, look, you know, they meet all of these. Should we check their bloods to see if they are deficient in anything, or are they, you know, missing things? It's just really sad because there's so many people out there that are struggling, and it just doesn't seem to be going anywhere. You know, there seems to be no push in trying to get, and I get things need researching, don't they? Like, everything takes time, doesn't it? Nothing's ever quick to change. You know, they need research and they need the data to work off. But us families that are going through it now, it's really tough.
Through your Instagram page, have you connected with any adults with ARFID? And has that been useful?
Actually, I'd say most probably the last few weeks, I've had a couple of adults message me, or like sort of older sort of like mid-teens and stuff that have got ARFID. And it's actually been really interesting talking to them, because I suppose I'm seeing it as a parent. You know, I don't have ARFID, so I only understand it as much as watching it on the outside. But actually to talk to someone who is living it is actually quite interesting. And it's interesting to see how theirs maybe works differently to a child. You know, and I know other mums who, like, their children have had, like, late onset ARFID, so they was a really good eater, kind of hit school. That kind of school-based anxiety has triggered ARFID. So there's so many different aspects to it, which I think makes it quite hard for the NHS and professionals to understand, because every single person is so different. It's not like one shoe of ARFID fits everybody. It's so different.
Yeah, and then it comes down to believing and trusting their advocate, their parent, their carer, the person that's putting them forward. It comes up to trusting that, doesn't it? Them.
Yeah, and someone's just parents referred to a parenting class, I think, and that's the hardest part about it. Yeah. It's really tough. Like, B, if anyone is interested, do have support class, or they have like support workshops, but again it comes down to your postcode, which is very frustrating. But one of them is like, there's, I think when I did it, there was 14 of us, and it was good because you kind of see everyone else's stories. But again, it just, even from coming from Beat, which is such a huge eating disorder charity, it highlighted that there's no help. And actually a lot of, I think there was 4 families on there that had been signposted from their GP to do this support group because they didn't know what else to do. Yeah, it's quite a tricky situation to be in, to be honest. And I think that's what's scary. You kind of, I've been around God knows how many houses and still knocking on doors and still not really knowing where to go. But
so I guess your account then is creating what you wish you had.
Pretty much, yeah. And I just don't want people to feel alone or feel lonely. Like, you're not alone. Like, I have made so many, most probably lifelong friends through having this account and being able to reach out to so many people that understand. Like, the amount of times I send people, you know, I'd rather send someone I'd spoke to on here a message being like, oh, it's up the table, because they would get it. Whereas actually one of my friends that I've known for years would be like, and he's sat up the table, what do you want me to do about it? I don't get it. Whereas actually someone who's living it and someone who understands, they celebrate that win with you. And I do think that a community and building people that truly get it is important.
They know how big it is, don't they? They know how huge it is. They know how much has gone into that step.
Massive.
Charlie said a similar thing a few weeks back when talking about ARFID and autism as well. She said it's just so lovely having a community that are in the corner that you don't need to explain too much. They just know.
And Charlie's just put, I love our daily voice notes. If anyone was to listen to our daily voice notes, I'd think we're nuts.
But you do need that.
But it is that. You know, and even if it's a voice note crying to someone, you know, Charlie said to me the other day that AJ had eaten. I genuinely cried because I was just like, oh my God. And, you know, and everyone's journey is so different. But I think when they just, even if they pick something up and sniff it or lick it, oh my God, like, it's just, it's such a heartwarming feeling. And it's funny how something so small to someone else, to you, can be so huge. Like, a lot of people are like, yay, my kid can ride a bike. I'm like, oh, mine can smell bread. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and actually,
you know,
and it's, I mean, as far as like disorders go, and anxiety goes, there are so many ways it can present itself, isn't it?
There's OCD, definitely.
There's Tourette's, you know, the list goes on.
Yeah.
But with food, it just feels really hard because you can't avoid eating completely and be okay.
Yeah, and that's it, isn't it? And I think that's the problem. I think where they have no interest in food, it's really hard to, I suppose, break that barrier to get them interested in it. You know, we're quite fortunate. Arlo loves cooking. He loves to meal prep with me. Yeah, which is brilliant. Like, we make pizzas, he makes mini pizzas, but he just will not eat it, and that's fine. But we just hope that over time, where he's just getting more and more used to being around food, that maybe one day he may try something. But that's, I think, our hurdle, it's fascinating. And everyone says that, you know, even tonight we had a roast dinner randomly on a Monday, and he was like, what are you cooking? And I was like, oh, I'm doing the potatoes. And he was asking loads of questions, and he's very intrigued by food. And that's kind of getting more and more as he's getting older, and he is interested. Like, he says, oh, what you got? Or, you know, what we having for dinner today? And he even now comes home from school, what time's dinner? And I'm like, what do you mean, what time's dinner? Because he's now, I suppose, got into his routine that he sits with us up the table. He goes and gets his tablet, or he goes and makes a train track that then ends up around our dinner, which obviously isn't very ideal.
Whatever, it doesn't matter.
I know. Literally sat and eating dinner and had Thomas train track going around the edge with our plates in the middle, because I just thought, well, at the end of the day, you sat with me. I don't care.
Absolutely.
And I've even... And he's delivered to me like wedges, and I've stuck them in the back of the carriages, and he's been happy as Larry.
But he's touching it. He's smelling it. He's sitting with you.
And he's touched it. And he's, to him, he's just playing, but actually he don't realise that he's interacting with that food. And I think that's the key.
Yeah.
It's kind of having food play as such that's not any time to do with mealtime. You know, we have got a tough tray that is designated for food play. And he'll come home from school and he calls it his experiments. And he says, oh, what experiment can we do? So he rummages through the cupboards, finds whatever he wants, and we play with it. But he knows there's no pressure there to eat. He might be driving a monster truck through bread and looking at the patterns, or painting with yogurt on a bit of bread, so, you know, doing whatever. But he knows there's no pressure there. But again, it's good exposure.
Yes, yeah, so that's the important thing. Yeah. That is something that we're trying at school. We do cooking every week, and we've said, look,
which is brilliant.
It's one parent. Look, don't worry about that it's going to be pressure and demand. Just the fact he's in the classroom and we're doing it is a great thing.
Just the fact they're even in the same room.
Absolutely. But similarly to your son, actually, he's more than happy to make the thing.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to have any pressure or even be hinted at that he might eat it.
Yeah, and you know,
and that's his barrier.
Yeah, and that's Arlo's barrier. He'll make it. I'll plate it all up, and I'll say, "Look, there's Daddy's dinner." And he goes, "Daddy, I made that." And off he goes. I'm like, "Oh, bye. See you later." You know, he's happy. He's done it. He's proud. He wants to tell Daddy that he's made him dinner, but that's where the level stops. He's like, "I'm not coming back because you might ask me to eat it." And then give him a couple of minutes, and he'll come and sit with us when he realizes that Daddy's eating it. So I suppose that pressure's gone in his little head. So then he feels safe to sit with us.
So it's so interesting how that works, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's very fascinating how he works. Obviously, Harry's connected the throat pain to swallowing. It's kind of like, my next mission's going to be potentially looking into how can I get this trauma out of him. I ain't got no clue what I'm doing. Like most of us, we're winging it. But it's kind of what would be my best route of trying to help him just getting over that fear of swallowing. I think maybe fear, once he swallowed something once, he may, we can only hope, eat, but I think it's just he's got such a fear at the minute until we get rid of that.
Yeah, it's hard as well, isn't it? Because it's connected to your air pipe, your windpipe, and if you're a bit nervous about swallowing, like we've all had those massive tablets, if you're a bit nervous, like it doesn't go well, does it? And then think,
no.
End to that.
And it's like the sensory in your mouth, isn't it? It's like all the feels you have, the food being here, there and everywhere. What if it gets stuck in his teeth? You know, everything's just...
It's so,
and like you say, once you've even just swallowed it, it's got to go down. He's going to feel that. Yeah. And I think he'll most probably feel it more than anyone, because nothing's been swallowed for...
Yeah.
Other than, well, he had yogurt for 18 months. And so he's not really eating anything for near on 2 years. So his body... We have got a dentist appointment this week. So I said to my mum, you know, even he's not chewing.
Yeah.
So, you know, does that affect his muscles in his mouth? I think your brain just starts going into overdrive that you start thinking of everything else. Well, is it going to affect his teeth?
Isn't it? It's so unknown. And the medical professionals that are typically there to support you don't know either. You know, the easily accessible one.
Yeah. And I don't think my dentist fully understands either. You know, touch wood, his teeth were okay. Like, he was on really, really strong iron medicine, which unfortunately has really heavily stained his teeth. But hopefully, once they fall out and his new adult teeth come through, they will be fine. Yeah. But, you know, I've said to her so many times, like, what effect could it potentially have on his teeth? And she's just like, don't know. And I'm like, okay, just another thing that we need to ride with. Hope that his teeth survive.
This generation can't be the first to have experienced this.
No, definitely not.
So why are we still at the very beginning of learning about this?
It's crazy, isn't it? And I think that's why I've been on such a mission to raise awareness, I think, just for that reason. I think unless we all share our stories or pester people like your local MP or, you know, my local GP surgery, I've got like a
parent participation group, and I've joined that, and they actually have then been putting out in their newsletters about ARFID, which obviously is good because then it's in their surgery, it's being emailed out to people. It's just those little things you think maybe someone might read that and be like, what's that? And then they might, you know, have their own little light bulb moment, or it might bring up a conversation with someone else. You know, I've been to coffee mornings with other families more just so that I can talk to other people. And, you know, some of them haven't even heard of it. I think, you know, it's sad because we shouldn't actually be the people that are doing it. I think the information should be out there already. I think that's the problem. And I don't, it's like you need someone in the NHS or someone somewhere to take hold of it and be like, right, I'm going to sort this out.
Yeah.
And we will get these families the support they need. But it's not that simple, is it? If only it was.
But it does take brave people like you, because you're putting your life out there, right? Like you're putting yourself on a pedestal to be judged and commented on, but also to be supported. I get that.
Yeah.
But it must be, you know, you're being really brave by doing that, I think.
Yeah, and it's hard because you think, you know, it's your personal life, and I'm not really that kind of person. I was never the person that would sit here on a live on Instagram. It was just never me. I was never that person. Like, I danced as a kid and would dance on stage, but I would hide in the back of the classroom at school and I would just sit quietly. As much as I could talk for England, I was never that confident person. But I think when something affects your child so much and you can see they're not getting the support they need, like my daughter's got a rare bone disease. No one's ever even heard of that. But her care, I can't fault it. You know, her consultant is incredible. I could send him an email and he'll reply the next day and he'll see her next week. He's brilliant. He's fantastic. And I think that's my problem.
You need the equivalent of that.
And that's what I keep saying to him. Yeah. I'm like, can you copy and paste yourself into the eating disorder world? And I think that's most probably what gave me a bee in my bonnet, was the fact that she's got such good care for something that's not very known. Why hasn't he got the same care when actually it affects him a lot more? And so I think that's most probably what did it. It just made me go, I'm not having it. The MP now knows who I am because I'm not going to stop until I have a face-to-face meeting with her.
Which,
and I'm not that kind of person, but it's turned me into that. I am that parent. I am that parent that walks into a clinic and
she's going to advocate for your child like you.
No. And I think even it's not even that I'm just advocating for my own. I think I've got to the point now that I'm like, there's so many families that are struggling just like I am that maybe wouldn't have that chance to speak up or wouldn't have the confidence to, that I'm like, no, I'm gonna fight for everyone. I will make sure that something gets done because it's just not fair.
Absolutely.
It's just, my heart breaks, and I actually feel more upset for other people when they tell me about their stories, and I think, God. And I then forget that I'm actually living it too.
You're one of them.
Yeah, and I actually think it hits harder listening to other people's stories, because I think this is just not, we should all be supported. We all should have a port of call that we can go to, or at least have some support so that we know that we can manage.
Yeah, because it is absolutely about life and health, and it's essential. It's so dangerous.
If
you get the wrong advice, if you do slightly the wrong thing, it's incredibly dangerous, isn't it?
Is, and I think the problem is a lot of people just get hit with the whole, oh, it's just fussy eating, do this, you know, try and get them off of being brand led, get them a new brand, take the Pringles out of one tub and put the other ones in, just don't tell them. You can't do that with a child with ARFID. You cannot fool a child that is so particular and so strict on what they eat. You can't fool them.
Yeah.
And actually it's dangerous, because if you muck around with a safe food, you're gonna lose it. And then actually you've not gained anything. I know we have to take risks in life, and I suppose there will come a point, most probably when Arlo gets older, that we can only hope he wants to change, and we are going to have to maybe push him a bit. But he'll be old enough to understand that he's only going to change when he's ready. And I think that will be a conversation we'll have in years to come.
I really hope when it does come to that time that you can do it with the support of a really good team behind.
And I can only hope that too. And I think that's it, isn't it? And it's sad, but I think we are the people that unfortunately are the research. I think we are the data. I actually think we're technically, most probably, we are the guinea pigs, which is awful. I don't want to be that. I would love to have someone that understood it and I could sit there and actually have a good conversation and be like, wow, you really do get it, rather than speaking to a dietitian and she goes, just make sure he doesn't stop drinking his milk. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, as if you were that already.
I know that. It's very important. It's, I don't know. It is that, it's the worry. It's the fact that there is just so many people out there. You just haven't got someone that you can feel. And even I've spoken to, you know, counsellors or therapists, and you think, can I trust you to work with Arlo in the first place? Because I don't know if you even know what I'm talking about properly. Yeah. It's really hard, well, you know, and
yes,
I've
because
been...
you've got to trust them to come yeah. in and with the possibility they might make it worse.
Yes. And I think because he's so young, and I think we are in such... we are in a very, very sticky situation. We cannot lose his milk. We can't lose it. And I think we've all taken a massive step back since he had his appendix out for that reason. And I think if anyone was to enter to be able to help us, I'm going to have to trust them with my whole
literally
body, because we haven't got anything to lose. We cannot lose his milk. And I think we've got to be able to fully trust someone to welcome it's support.
It's an incredibly desperate place to be yeah. at, but it's also an incredibly vulnerable place to be at, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I'm desperate for help, but I'm also not that desperate that I'm actually going to jeopardise his life. And I think, do you know what? If he lives off of milk till he's however old, then so be it. And I think if I can just get them slight little wins and little progresses along the way that make our life maybe socially a little bit more easier, then that's what it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think lots of parents will be listening to this and feel really reassured that they are doing enough, because they're being an advocate, they're being their best support, they're being an advocate for their child. Ultimately, that is where your role stops. You cannot control their intake. And I think that's what it comes down to, right?
Yeah.
You can make it worse, but you can't control making it better. You just have to facilitate an environment where they feel as safe as possible, and as comfortable as possible. That's where your control ends.
And it is true. And I think he holds that control. That little bit that I haven't got is all on him. At the end of the day, the control is onto him. When he shows me any inkling that he's ready to change, then we'll go with it. But I think at the moment, we take every 24 hours as it comes, no pressure, get on with it. And just hope. I think most probably that's why he's got a lot calmer. I think he's most probably picked up that I've just gone off or whatever.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Isn't it?
It's and I do think
acceptance.
And I think that's it. It took me a really, really, really long time. I hit rock bottom. And I think dealing with two children with two completely different needs just got way too much. And I think I popped.
Yeah.
But it took me to pop to then go, how can I support these two kids if I ain't supporting myself? And I knew that I had to accept myself that this was our situation and this is now our family life. And it has, I think it has massively, massively helped. And it is, acceptance is a huge part of it, I think. If you can accept it, you most probably will notice the change slowly. Because I have, I've noticed it.
It's far easier said than done, isn't it?
Oh, God, like, it is far easier said than done.
You can't choose to accept it.
You can't. And as much as I think I most probably tried to accept it for a very, very long time, I obviously didn't. I didn't accept it for a very long time. And it was only maybe the last 9 months maybe that I accepted it. And I reckon I fully accepted it when he had his appendix out, because I knew that I had to do everything I can to keep this environment as low as possible, because we can't get any worse than what we're in. And I genuinely think that's what's done it. I genuinely think we've all just gone, whoa, we can't risk this kid any longer. That let's just roll with it. And I genuinely think that's what's done it. He's just been like a different kid. And I do think most probably,
isn't it? Because you think releasing all pressure, even if it's a subtle subconscious one, would think then he'll stop trying and then he'll never do it. And
and he'll stop making progress and maybe he'll stop eating that. Yeah. Actually, the opposite has happened, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. The opposite has happened completely. And I think that's most probably what people get scared of. And I got scared of it, to be honest. You kind of think, God, if I strip everything back and don't ask you if you're hungry, like, yeah, I monitor when he's had his milk. So obviously that's all he's having. So I have to monitor it, like, especially when he's at school. We find he has a lot when he comes home to kind of fill himself back up. And then at the weekend, we kind of gauge it, how long it's been. And if it has been a bit too long, we do make his milk and I'll leave it on the sofa. 9 times out of 10, he'll drink it. So we do have to monitor, but we're monitoring it in a way that he's completely unaware.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like, I'll just give, just say to my husband.
Pressure.
It's pressure.
I know, shoulda, woulda, coulda. And do tell me, like, I'm not even going to answer that question. But do you wish that when you were on yogurts or whatever, that you had this same ethos of just release all pressure? Or do you not like to think like that? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Maybe. I did have that, but it wasn't as strong as what it is now.
No.
I think most probably a lot of it was very... He would flip between, like, he was just living off of strawberry yogurt, and he might randomly one day he would have like a different flavour, and I'd be like, oh, quick, he's going to have more different flavours, and then he'd go back to just strawberry. So he kind of was testing the waters with different yogurts. But yeah, most probably nowhere near is what I feel now. I think now I feel very solid in the fact that we just can't.
Yeah.
We've got to keep Arlo happy, and I think if he's happy, then I'm happy. I think that's all we can go by. And it's hard, and don't get me wrong, like even yesterday I was sat on my phone looking at things that I could potentially do or courses that I could go on. What could I train in? What training can I do to help him? Which is bonkers.
I mean, acceptance doesn't mean that you can't keep striving for a healthier, happier child.
Accepting
the situation you are in, but also not accepting, like, you're accepting him, but you're not accepting the lack of support.
Yeah.
You're not accepting the lack of education from the GPs.
Yeah.
You're not accepting the lack of...
Exactly.
So you're accepting him in his situation.
But it's just give me the fire to not accept the rest.
Absolutely.
All you can do is try your best. And
with the knowledge you have at the time and in the moment, right?
Yeah, go with what's in front of you at the moment, you know. I think that's all you can do. But yeah, don't give up. I think you've just still, if your GP's telling you that they can't help you, keep going back. I would.
Yeah.
Keep going back to your GP. You know, Arlo only had a paediatrician appointment today because I moaned that he didn't have one. So they booked him one. I think my name must be like red listed of like, don't ignore this woman. You know, my last letter from the MP, she was like, oh yeah, because my daughter won an award, but the MP was there and I had to really hold it back not to say something to her. I was very, very, very professional that day. But I then sent her a letter and she was like, oh, I remember you. And I was like, good, we're on face terms. And it's like a gradual thing. But I think we all have just got to keep going. You know, you feel like a pest, be a pest. I think the more we advocate and I think the more we keep the conversation going, I think if we all stay too much in the background, they're not going to see the needs there. And I think that's the problem. Yes. There is such a need for change that I think you need to be vocal about it. Otherwise, they're never going to change it. And I think that's the scary part.
Absolutely. And the more of you there is, it doesn't have to just be all on your shoulders. No. You can
pick exactly. Need a little army.
Exactly. If you're having a bad week, like I'm sure there are, because where your child just needs all of you and you haven't got time for social media.
No, you have to take that time away.
Absolutely, and you can do that because you know there's a whole army behind you that are gonna be
helping
for you that week. So it's better shared, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not like you're talking about something that you've overcome or something that
you're in it.
That you did 10 years ago. You know that you can have a resolution and you have all the answers. You're very much in it. And I think
that's it. And I think you feel like you want to give someone an answer, but I don't have that answer because I'm actually a parent just like everyone else. It's just that me being more aware of how our situation is and how what's worked may potentially help someone else. But I'm by all means no medical professional. I'm just a mum. I'm a retired nail technician. You know, it's just, I think sometimes you just have to keep going.
And with the support of other people around you, that's more possible, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think that's most probably the most important thing. Get everyone around you on your side. The support is the most best thing you could ever find. You know, I've backed away from friends on this, from this journey, because I think sometimes if people don't want to understand, I haven't got time to help them understand. No, and I think if someone wants to support me and support my family, they'll accept us as we are, and if they will then allow that to be continued, then that's great. But if they don't, then unfortunately I haven't got the time, and I don't have the time. You know, it's hard enough. Yeah, it's hard enough even talking to people, family, let alone, you know, friends that just don't understand. My life is heavily consumed of phone calls, emails, appointments, missing people, you know. You don't get much time for yourself. So
thank you so much, everybody. Go and follow Arfid Life UK. Thank you so much, guys, and have a lovely
day. Right, and thank you so much for having me.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.